Chapter 10. As we made our final approach to the strangely overgrown planet, Imperator Turov couldn't resist the opportunity for one last speech while she had her captive audience intact. We were called to the module briefing area where our glorious leader was displayed on the far wall. The image had to be 30 feet high. Her dark eyes were a lovely almond-shaped, but they were disturbing at this level of magnification.
"Troops," she said, addressing all of us, "I have a treat for all of you. Justice."
The camera view switched to Minotaur's tactical control room. I'd been in that chamber before and noticed it hadn't changed much. There were two primary operators who both had to engage the firing system at the same time to arm the broadsides. As we watched, they checked the final targeting data and gave our hovering camera drone the thumbs up.
"We've located a source of emissions on the planet's surface which doesn't match any natural patterns," Turov said on voiceover as we watched the gunners work their equipment. "We've picked up radio transmissions, heat, and other energy release readings. This region on the southern coast of the central continent must contain their base."
The camera shifted to an external view. We watched as the massive broadsides smoothly traversed and zeroed in. The big guns didn't look like they were aiming right at the planet. But when you're throwing fusion shells over 1,000,000 kilometers, you had to take gravitational effects into account as everything began to curve.
"Locked on," Turov's voice announced.
A yellow circular firing reticle lit up on the planet. We were indeed aiming at the southern coast of the largest central continent. Shrouded in clouds and covered in purplish-green vegetation, the continent was a big piece of land, maybe the size of Asia.
"And now, I'll clue in our criminal friends concerning our intentions. They will bear witness to their punishment, even as we mete it out."
A red box lit up on the screen, and the word "transmitting" appeared.
"Alien criminals,"
Turov announced in an officious voice.
"We have come to deliver justice to this world. Whether you know it or not, you're within the boundaries of the Galactic Empire. We are local enforcers in this province. We will now annihilate you in recompense for your attack upon local shipping."
We all watched, fascinated. Turov's speech was making it more suspenseful, I had to admit. I wasn't feeling any remorse for the enemy. This was their base. With any luck, the enemy raiding ship that had killed so many back home would be down there. We'd blast them all dead in one shot.
"We're broadcasting this announcement to you using every known form of communication," Turov continued talking to the unknown aliens, "including that of the Cephalopod Kingdom, just in case you're allied with them. Let it be known that we do not take this action for reasons of anger and revenge. We are merely applying the strict rule of galactic law to creatures that..."
Something happened then, and Turov stumbled in her speech. The screen, which depicted the planet as seen from our zoomed-in targeting systems, changed. It was a subtle change at first. A glimmer of shiny green appeared, not just at one spot, but at a dozen of them all at once. They were objects, unknown ovoid contacts, appearing between Minotaur and the target world.
"What the hell are those things?"
Carlos asked aloud. I was his superior, and I should have cuffed him one, telling him to shut up during our top officer's speech. But I didn't. I was too dumbstruck and confused to do much of anything.
"I see there is a response,"
Turov said, regaining her composure.
"Crew, take defensive action. It will make no difference how they try to squirm away from their fate."
Turov had always been long-winded. There had been more than one occasion in our storied adventures together during which I'd wished she'd get on with the show. This time, like so many others, she decided to keep on talking.
"As I was saying, We take this action to correct a grave wrong inflicted upon us, after enduring your punishment, from which there is no escape. You must submit to the Empire and hope that they will be merciful. When the Nair prefects eventually come here to see that justice is exercised properly, it's possible those of you who have survived this day will be spared. I make no promises, but with appropriate supplication and an attitude of servile...
The green things, which were shiny and kind of egg-shaped, took action again. Instead of hanging around Minotaur, they plunged toward it. Intercepting fire from a dozen point defense cannons blazed orange sparks out from our dreadnought to meet these incoming green eggs. They popped and burned, but more and more appeared behind them.
We're under attack,
Turov said irritably. I could tell she was annoyed that the enemy had managed to cut off her speech, which was just winding up to its climax. When she spoke again, her words came out a little more quickly.
In conclusion, I say this to those who are about to be crushed. You're on the wrong track. The road to total destruction is paved by resistance. You will learn this lesson now. Weaponeers, fire the broadsides.
The view from outside the ship disappeared as the blast shields rolled into place and clammed shut. Then the broadsides spoke at last. Having been aboard dreadnoughts before when they unleashed the power of their primary weapons, I knew to brace myself. The deck bucked up with the tremendous release of energy. Plenty of my fellow troops either hadn't known what to expect or they'd forgotten. People were knocked to their knees or even onto their faces. The ship's stabilizers fought to keep the vessel on an even keel, and after shuddering with sickening aftershocks, the automated systems seemed to manage the task. But the shivering didn't subside completely. The ship was still rolling a little, quivering. It was as if we were releasing smaller projectiles, or...
Those green pods, Carlo said, climbing back to his feet. They're hitting us, right now, landing on the hull.
He was right, he had to be. Visors down, I roared to my confused troops as they picked themselves up off the deck. Weapons locked and loaded.
Listen up, Graves said in my helmet. He'd engaged the unit-wide channel, so I didn't have to relay his instructions. We've been hit by unknown objects. They're sticking to the hull. We don't know anything more, but in case this is a boarding attempt, we're to report to the rim outside Blue Deck.
The rim was a region between two heavy hulls. The inner hull of the ship had an empty pocket between it and the outer skin. I hadn't spent much time in that region of the ship, except for a few training drills, but I was game for something new today.
Stay together, squad, I ordered. Follow me.
Rifles in our hands, we clanked for the exit. On the big forward screen, I caught a final glimpse of Galina Turov. She looked pissed off, and maybe, just maybe, a tiny bit scared. Her haughty pronouncement of doom had been transformed into a battle by an enemy who appeared to be more cunning than she'd thought. I wasn't any happier about that than she was. As I trotted through passages full of yellow flashes and blaring alarms, I couldn't help but wonder how this was going to go down. After all, it seemed to me that this enemy, whoever they were, had been at least one jump ahead of us every step of the way. They'd shown up in our skies back on Earth, stolen part of a vital cargo from an Earth freighter, and managed to send the freighter crashing down into the middle of two assembled legions. Today, what had appeared to be a desperate attempt to escape our fleet had instead transformed into a trap to ensnare us. The knowledge that our broadsides had already fired on them gave me some solace, however. The enemy may have miscalculated on that score. Those shells were arcing toward their base, and as far as I knew, they were unstoppable.
That had to be the dumbest thing I've ever seen Turov do, Carlo said inside my headset on a private channel, and I've seen them all.
I didn't really have time to talk to Carlos, but he had me curious with that statement. What do you mean, specialist? Carlos was my squad's resident medic on this mission. A bio-specialist of the lowest grade, he'd been assigned to our combat unit to patch us up. On the surface of things, that sounded logical enough, He had good fighting skills, and I was pretty sure they'd tested him and determined that he would suck at any other function a bio normally performed. I couldn't easily imagine him running the revival machines, performing surgery, or even providing long-term care for the moderately wounded. Because of this, embedding him in a combat unit as a medic seemed to be a no-brainer, but I had my reservations. I didn't relish being patched up by my old friend, despite his new stripes and training. All that said, I still wanted to know what he was thinking about Turov.
I mean that she broadcast some long speech at the aliens instead of just firing on them, he explained. That was a mistake. Maybe they didn't even know we were hostile. Maybe they weren't sure we were in space. We probably had the element of surprise going in, but no, she had to go and make a speech and blow all that.
You might be right, I admitted, but what's done is done. We have orders. Let's follow them. I cut off his channel and opened my squad chat. All right, listen up. I want everyone looking sharp when we come through this hatch into the rim. Remember that there's no pressure in there. Not much in the way of gravity either. Turn on your magnetics and keep buttoned up. Look around for anything like a breach and sound off if you see anything. We reached the hatch and I opened it after taking a breath. A whoosh of escaping gas rushed past me like a small storm. There was an airlock, but it wasn't an efficient one with pumps and pressure equalizers. All it did was limit the amount of air it farted out when you opened the side that led into vacuum. We rushed into the airlock and sealed the hatch behind us. The whole squad fit, just barely. Harris's squad was next in line to go through, and they watched us with grim expressions and tight grips on their weapons. We swung the second, massive hatch open, which released a gush of air into the rim between the hulls. In between the two hulls were the ribs of the ship. These titanium bones ran beyond the limits of our sight above and below us. Each rib wrapped around the belly of the ship. They were huge, imposing, and curved with the ship's contours.
"Tactics vet?" Sargon asked me. "With my belcher, I mean? Use your weapon as you see fit, weaponeer," I said. "This area is kind of tight. Only about 10 meters between the hulls, with lots of structural girders and the like. We'll be on patrol, but you never know when you'll run into a surprise."
I saw him cranking his weapon aperture to a medium setting. I approved. It's what I would have done. Widening the muzzle a bit turned his weapon into a shotgun rather than a rifle, but without making it as broad and uncontrollable as a fire hose. I'd spent years as a weaponeer myself, and when I didn't know what I was going to be aiming at in a tight space, I broadened the scope so I would at least make sure I didn't miss. Off toward the stern was another knot of troops. My HUD told me it was the 3rd squad from my platoon. Adjunct Leeson had seen fit to fight with them instead of with me, and that was just fine in my book. Sometimes an officer in your midst on a patrol mission could be more of a hindrance than a help. We moved as a squad to the location that Graves had pinpointed on my tactical display. The position was depicted both inside my helmet and on my tapper. When we reached our post, we dispersed, taking what cover we could, and latched our clamps and cords onto the girders. Then, we waited. The waiting was far from peaceful. The ship often vented gases into the rim, blasts of unknown origin that equalized pressure from inside the ship into this no-man's land in between the hulls. The ship also lurched and wallowed at random intervals. I knew the pilots were trying to maneuver and avoid danger. I could only hope they were being successful.
"Unit," Graves said several long minutes later, "we've got word from Goldtech. We're to expect boarders. Repeat, the hull is being breached in a dozen spots. At first, they clustered their attempts to penetrate near the jacket that encircles the engine core. That was too thick for them, apparently, and they've shifted tactics. They're now attempting entry all over the outer hull looking for the thin spots. It won't be hard for them to find a weak point."
A single question was burning in my mind, and I took this opportunity to ask it. "How are they getting in, sir? How can they drill through even a single meter of titanium that fast?"
"They aren't drilling," he said. "The word is, they're using concentrated acid. The shielding around the core was dense and full of lead, but the rest of the skin is relatively thin. The acid is eating holes in Minotaur, like a hot flame applied to wax.
Acid? I gave my head a shake. The enemy had an acid that ate metal like nothing? How had they gotten it up here in sufficient quantities? And what were those shiny green egg things anyway? Pods full of acid? There weren't any answers forthcoming, but we were about to have company. Even as I cradled my rifle and tried to look everywhere at once, Kiwi shouted behind me. I craned my neck and levered myself around to see where she was pointing. "There it is," I shouted. "We've got a breach. Centurion Graves, we've got a breach. I see liquid running inside the hull near my position. It looks like the titanium is dissolving into bubbling, smoking mercury."
"Keep your head straight, McGill," Graves replied. "We've got reported breaches in a half dozen spots. Hold your position and repel the enemy. Graves out."